check, check, and it ain't no bargain. Me, I go call me Frontier Don
He said,
I wouldn't
said,
I'm laughing, about the whole
said, I'm laughing out of respect.
The reason. Oh, just how you said, just the professional.
I said, I'm laughing out of respect.
Just one.
Captain Parham, your headphones, sir.
Your headphones, sir.
You just spoke to me. Power, power. It's the one. Power, power. It's the who. Power, power. Yeah, yeah. Black is the name. Power, power. It's the one. Power, power. It's the who. Power, power.
Every Saturday morning, you need to be tuning in. Wake up, you cross out your eyes. We about to go live, so come get the schooling in. About our oppression, we answer the questions like, how do we get out this low estate? We let the script prophesy. We bringing the Bible to life so that you relate. The world thinks we're rejects, but that word we reject. Watch and we'll show you precept upon precept. Line upon line, the script say with the greatest, and they can't debate it. Salvation is only for the blacks, Hispanics, and natives.
Power, power, it's the one. Power, power, it's the who. Power, power, yeah, yeah. Blacks, Hispanics, and natives. Power, power, it's the one. Power, power, it's the who. Power, power, yeah, yeah. Blacks, Hispanics, and power, power, it's the one. Power, power, it's the who. Power, power, yeah, yeah.
Shalom, shalom. Welcome to the Power Hour Plus Edition. I'm Captain Yahshua.
Shalom, good evening, Captain Aparim.
Shalom, Most High in Christ Bless, Captain Amariah.
Shalom, Officer Zacchaeus.
Officer Zacchaeus in the house.
Yes, sir.
We got full kingdom representation. We got Northern and Southern Kingdom today.
That is correct.
The three of us, Northern Kingdom and then Southern Kingdom.
What you got to say about that?
He's like, listen.
Muting my mic.
Muting my mic.
Listen, I've been convincing people I'm Levi for the past 9 years. The joke's on them.
He said the joke's on them.
That is
the same. It's like the brother that was here and he was like, I'm Judah. He says, but when people say he's Benjamin, he just say, hey, Benjamin, though.
Yeah, he didn't even look.
He's from Antigua. He Benjamin.
He looked Benjamin too. Right? Oh yeah, he kind of got a little offended because I asked him. Wait a minute.
He said, "Yeah, that's why I don't." He went to the bathroom and everything because he didn't want to freaking announce his tribe. Everybody's gonna say I'm something else. Like, hey, why does everybody want to be Judah? Why does everybody want to be Judah for? I don't get it. Yeah, we all Judah anyway by default.
That's right.
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 Right. Speak to me, Judah. Why does everybody want to be Judah?
I can't tell you.
That's because you're God.
I can't tell you. That's what they say.
See, nope.
That's what they say.
A real Judah would have a firm answer in that.
I could, you know.
I'm going to speak to the Judah delegation about your...
You can, you know, if it's revoked, I still got a gate.
Your hesitation does bear witness.
Your hesitation does bear witness.
My goodness, bro.
Yep.
That was terrible.
Yeah.
Go out, get out of here.
Yeah.
Go away. Read some books.
Well. So we're back. We're back for another edition. All right. We're continuing to deal with Puerto Rico. All right. Lots of juicy details in that. We gotta make them tents of Ephraim listen up. All right. And also, listen, I understand. See, that's a good answer, brother said, because Christ comes from Judah. That would have been a
simple.
Easy
we hear that
short,
all the time.
Short. So you wanted to go a different route. But you wanted to go a different route.
I'm different. Right. But the brother's in the spirit.
So you laugh at jokes that you don't understand. You can't give a definitive reason why
everyone's off
the
camera.
No. That's an answer you gave when you're stuck in a corner surrounded by three guys.
He said, let me be.
That's wisdom, right?
Three blacks.
I don't know. I got to talk to the Judah delegation about you, man. I don't know. We're gonna have to verify some things.
He needs some milk.
You're going to go through
Eliezer
to figure it out?
Oh, no. Hey, I think a lot of times we be in the spirit when we say somebody's not. It's kind of worked out, right?
I mean, think so.
Yeah. I think, like, for the most part, because we don't do that with everybody.
Nope, not at all.
No.
Right? You could tell Judah, we just say,
right. Yeah, we just, yeah, that's right. What's
what
up, Judah?
What would you say?
I don't know, bro. I don't know.
I think Levi, bro.
Zebulon.
He says Zebulon.
I seen your pops. Your pops
you know
look
what?
Levi.
Levi or Zebulon, I would say, bro. I think. Maybe. I don't know.
Hey, speak to the delegation.
We all the waters flow from Judah.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. So hey, so now that's Southern Kingdom's go to, right? I saw that on the captain's group. That's their go to now when something go down.
He said keep that same energy.
Yeah, keep that same energy for Northern Kingdom. No. So check it out. So when something happens for Northern Kingdom, I'll be like, I'm Judah. I don't know what you're talking about. And quote the same scripture.
Yep. Isaiah
8:1. Now what?
It's a whole different level.
Right. Hey, listen, when we talk about it here on the show, it's definitely all in good natured fun, right? You know, if you have a history of watching us and how we roll, you know, we all for that. Hey, the majority of the congregation here is Southern Kingdom. It's not Northern Kingdom. Mm-hmm. You know, people probably think that they see us and that it's...
I say it's split down the middle.
Well, you're counting sisters.
True.
All right? You know, it's like, because if that's the case, then Texas is split down the middle too, because they got a lot of Northern Kingdom sisters, mm-hmm. but they got a lot of Southern Kingdom brothers, right? Like Dallas, for example, is what I said.
Right. True.
But here, we don't have a lot of Northern Kingdom brothers.
Right.
See, you're counting the women.
Right.
That's not Judah. Oh, man. Yeah,
my card's been revoked on the Northern Kingdom show, huh?
Nah, you good. So we've been speaking about bringing things out on the history with Ephraim. We've been going through the War Against All Puerto Ricans book pretty strongly. Last week we announced how we're planning to step up the travel, right? We're going to be hitting Puerto Rico once a month. You know, permitting, we might do more, once a month from April through the end of the year. Right. We want to really try to focus on building it up, following the blueprint that Judah put out. Right. When we saw how they built up Jamaica, the Bahamas, similar type of thing was being done. And that's the blueprint. Right. That's what we need to follow. We did mention, you know, we do need your help with that. All right. We need you to donate to the Booster Club. OK. So that we can fund those trips and continue to push the word out in those places. Listen, Bishop can't be everywhere at once. Right. You know, some of the deacons can't be everywhere at once. So. I don't want to say the torch is being passed, but the directives have been given, and it's time that many of us who have the experience, the confidence of some of the senior leadership to go out there and do what we got to do and push this word. Not saying you won't ever see the bishop on any of these trips. I mean, I spoke to him about it. He said he'll see which ones he can pop into and stuff like that. And it's great to have him. I mean, if you've seen some of the Cuba footage, I mean, you know, he's there, you know, giving direction or whatever. And then he knows that he doesn't fully speak the language. So he's there in that support capacity. We saw the same thing in DR with him and Elder Kanai as well. And they were willing to hold posts, give out flyers, hold camp signs, all that stuff. So it's definitely a humbling experience to see a leadership, because we're so used to seeing them, right?
Yeah, right?
I mean, we're teaching in English. I mean, right? Who's going to do it better than them, right? We're just going to go ahead, you know, do your thing.
Right.
But they knew that. Hey, we're here. We're here to support you. We're here to...
That's that spirit that it talks about in Psalms when it says it's better to be a doorman mm-hmm. in the kingdom of heaven, right?
Yeah.
Just doing whatever it takes to accomplish the mission to be,
mm-hmm.
to understand that we're all working together so we can all profit
with
all.
That's it. That's it at the end of the day. That's exactly it. So you see the fundraising PayPal up there, right? IUIC.fundraising@IsraelUnite.org. IUIC.fundraising@IsraelUnite.org if you would like to donate to the travels, all right? Look at travels, and let's get more boots on the ground so that this gospel can be preached in the whole earth. Let's read that real quick before we move into the show topic, right?
Yeah,
this
we know.
The gospel shall be preached in the whole earth and then the end.
We know that. You know that one, right? Right? Coming from the Christian church there? Call it or read it.
You got it?
The book of Matthew, chapter 24, and verse 14. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations.
Right. So we have to preach it for a witness unto all nations, meaning show them that the spirit in this book bears witness with their spirit that they are the children of God. Right. Come on.
And then shall the end come.
And then we get to go home. Right. Those of us who are going to make it, right, if we're so blessed and that doorway is opened up to us, then we're going to go home. All right. So we have to make sure that the boots are on the ground and that we're out there. Thank you for posting that in the group, Brother Baruch, as well. I see that on Facebook. Again, it's IUIC. Oh, but don't click on. No, they're going to copy and paste. Correct the spelling, brother. You forgot the D in fundraising. You put fundraising.
It is going to be fun.
It is fun. It is fun when we go out there and bring that out. Edit that, Brother Baruch. Some people are going to copy and paste that. We're not going to get the donations. IUIC that fundraising at IsraelUnite.org.
It'll take a 2-hour page.
Well, it depends. Sometimes they'll let you do it, and it'll just stay unclaimed, and then they won't realize that it's like that because no email like that exists. So, yep. So we're going to continue reading from the pages of War Against All Puerto Ricans, all right? We're going to go through a little more things with Albizu Campos, and then we're going to branch off for a second because there's two things mentioned in some of the history that we're going to read today with Pedro Albizu Campos. And two of them, those of you who do know some stuff about Puerto Rico, you're going to see Vieques, and that should be fresh in some people's minds because that was as recently as 2003 or 4 before they shut that down, I think. I got to look at some of the dates that I pulled up. And then we're going to talk also about what they called Operation Bootstrap, right? After the term that the Edomites, the so-called Caucasians, who the world ignorantly calls Caucasians, but it's Edom. And they say, why don't you lift yourself up by your bootstraps? We tell them and we bring this out, you guys have robbed and stealed and pillaged and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And they tell you, why don't you lift yourself up by your bootstrap? So there was some legislation, they called it Operation Bootstrap. And it was on the surface. See, this is where you got to be careful with these bills that governments pass and stuff like that. I'm just giving you a little insight into it before we get to it. On the surface, it was designed to take Puerto Rico from the agricultural age to the industrial age. They wanted to industrialize Puerto Rico, and it was supposed to be a good thing. I'm going to show you how it was used as a mechanism to continue to maintain their preeminence over us. All right. It did not turn out that way. Until this day, the economy of Puerto Rico is stuck in a limbo between industrial and agriculture, and not nearly as much agriculture because after they went in and they built their wealth on that, they put this program in place. There's a lot. We might not even get to all of it today. We might have to carry through some of it to next week to fully deal with it. But we'll see where we go from there. All right. Let's get into the book. I sent you the pictures, Ashaya, or whoever's up there. We're gonna go back to page 121. That's where we left off last week. Page 121. All right. And we're gonna jump on this. So we were speaking about, just to recap, all right, how he was very successful with the sugar cane strike, right? They try to get him to sell out. They offered him all this stuff. He wound up getting them more than double the amount of wage increase than they'd ever gotten before. And that put them on the radar, right, to getting Wall Street and Washington's attention. And their edict was the Nationalist Party must be stopped by any means necessary. So we were also talking about how violence began. They tried to he had to be under 24-hour guard. The FBI was assaulting his house. They were trying to firebomb him. All right. He was building up the troops, right? It says, by 1936, over 10,000 cadets were marching and training in 21 towns. All right. So people were rallying to the cause, right? And, you know, that's important because it shows you that if you can galvanize, right, if people can see the cause, they'll go behind it. This is why we start with the identity, right? Know who you are, what conditions that we're in, right? Because our people are brainwashed to think that our enemies are our friends now, right? That they mean well for us and all of that. And that's not the case. Part of the reason, right, there's a lot of factors that go into why he was able to rally so many people to him was because they saw the effects and the results of what was going on with their people on the island. And they said, man, you know what? Now we have a mouthpiece. Now we got somebody that's going to speak for us and is effective at it.
You know what else though they had? He had, not only did he have an issue, he had a solution. And that brings me back to years ago when we started the whole campaign of why should I join IUIC and how will IUIC help my people? How will joining IUIC help my people?
Yeah. That's when Bishop was going over the organized nation class.
Yep.
Yeah. Was
and he said, you got to have the answers. You can't just tell them that. You can't just say, oh, we need to train people to help them in this. And, oh, read the scriptures. I remember that because that was the thing. That scripture.
That's what I tell people all the time. Like, I was talking to somebody recently, and she was, like, adamant that she can speak in tongues. And then my thing was, okay, then what? Then what?
Right.
Like, how does that help your salvation? Then what?
Right.
Okay, let's say you're right. You speak in tongues. Now what?
Hey, and I'll tell you something. That's why it's so important that we're able to articulate the solutions, mm-hmm. right? And it's not primarily the foundation of it all is keeping the commandments, right? Right? But we also need to begin to start to highlight all the things that we've done as a body and what we continue to do for people, the things that we've put in place. How we're helping out in the islands. This thing in Guyana, us building the school from scratch, that's a big deal, right?
It really is.
Because didn't Oprah get a lot of media attention when she built a school there? She built a worldly school where they were going to teach them lies, right?
She had professionals doing it.
Right. We got brothers that are they're professionals, they're tradesmen, but meaning they're working their regular jobs and then coming to work on the school.
And that's what I remember by professional.
Yeah.
She had contractors.
Yeah,
that
was their full-time job, right? These brothers are putting their bricks in and we're building the stuff up, right? Hey, and all praises to y'all that donate to the Booster Club, because guess what? The Booster Club does not just help travel. When we need to build a school, get rent for a school in a lot of these poorer countries, all right, the Booster Club helps facilitate things like that. Things like equipment for them to be able to get internet in these places, to watch the classes, to be able to spread their teachings locally and things like that. You brothers and sisters that are committed to the Booster Club, whatever it is, let me tell you, every little bit helps. All right. I see the very dollar amount of donations that go in there. Maybe you feel like, oh, well, I can't give enough. Listen, $5 multiplied by however many people, right? If there's thousands, if there's 10,000, all of that.
Especially in Guyana.
Yes. Exactly, because then it goes further. Don't feel shamed that you're giving too little. Just if it's in your spirit to do so, the Bible tells you give as you are able, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have substance, give out of your substance, right? So, and if you don't be afraid to give out of little, all right? We're building a school in Guyana, right? We're going to own it. And it's because of the Spirit of the Most High in Christ, first off, the brothers sharing and visualizing the vision, okay? And then, obviously, money's a defense, so having the resources there to do that thing. And if it be the Lord's will, and Lord's will life lasts, you're going to see us continue to follow that model everywhere we go, all right?
Hey, let's go back to Guyana, because talking about issue bringing out the issue and having a solution. There was an issue, right? They had nowhere to congregate,
mm-hmm.
right? That's an issue. It's a problem, right? And they came up with a solution. Well, we'll do it ourselves.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
They could have very easily went ahead and just said, oh, well, you know, we'll get it one day.
Yep.
You know, if it's the Lord's will. No, the Lord's will was blessing their hands to do this.
Right, right. Like when Bishop brought out that class, oh, the scriptures. No, we got to put brothers mm-hmm. there. Like, you got to put, you know, nose to the grindstone, right? Physically go and build these things. So it is important that we bring out the solutions as well. And Campos had those, right? He had a program in place that he wanted to hit them with, that he was going to move forward with, right? So we're going to start where it says Police Chief Riggs. So Police Chief Riggs was not impressed. On October 24th, 1935, an army of policemen raided a student rally, shooting and killing one cadet and three members of the Nationalist Party in what became known as the Rio Piedras Massacre. The massacre was barely mentioned in the American press. Historically, I mean, it's the age of the internet, so if you look that up specifically, you'll find information on it. But historically, that's not something that's out there for you to see more of. The Ponce Massacre is probably a little more known, but they don't tell you about these things, right? So it says, Police Chief Riggs told La Democracia that if Albizu continued agitating, there would be war to the death against all Puerto Ricans.
You know what's hypocritical about that? Didn't ISO advocate for independence from Britain?
Yep.
But it's a problem
when
we
right
were doing it.
That. You're right about that.
Wasn't that the whole thing?
Yep. You're right about
right?
that.
Because and you know what? In fact, it was the same thing, because their thing, their argument, quote unquote, was no taxation without representation, right? That's what they were fighting for.
Right.
First of all, we didn't ask them to go into Puerto Rico. And when they did, they destroyed it and made us dependent on them. It's very hypocritical.
That's a good point. It's the same. There's hypocrisy abound in all of everything that they've did.
That's right.
Because it was the exact same thing for them. They wanted, they were trying to fight for independence from Britain, right? We're tired of paying tribute. We're tired of this. If it was up to Britain, Esau here would have never made it like that.
Right.
So, but we know, we talk about the manifest destiny, not that God was on their side, but God was going to enable those things to happen, right? The true God, the one true God of Israel, was going to enable those things to happen so that they can move in the manner that was needed so the prophecies can be fulfilled in the scripture. So he said it was going to be war to the death against all Puerto Ricans. 3 months later, on February 23rd, 1936, Police Chief Riggs was assassinated on his way to El Escambrón. The two nationalists who shot him, Hiram Rosado and Elias Beauchamp, were arrested, beaten for an hour, then executed in San Juan Police Station. So he was playing dirty with them, so they went and they said, listen, we're going to take this guy out, and they took him out. Now, obviously, our warfare is spiritual now, right? But the conviction, so what do we attack? We attack the lies, right? The spiritual wickedness in high places, the strongholds of our people. That's, those are the things that we need to assassinate, not this individual thing that they were trying to do. And that's where a lot of these things kind of fail, man. And then you look at the technology nowadays that Esau has, man. I know Deacon always talks about it, man. They got lasers, man. They be shooting people with lasers. Boy, you see them drones? And you think you're going to rise up against this place?
Yo, they melt you.
They melt you.
They were doing that in Panama.
Bro, they do stuff with sound waves. Just make you sick. Don't even, can't even fight. Just make you sick. You're disoriented. Can't sleep. So now you got sleep deprivation. There's so many ways that you're not, the days of coups and revolutions on that physical front, that's long gone. They ain't know it. Also, you got guns.
Hey,
They got satellites.
Yeah, they got away with it during the American Revolution, so-called, because they had muskets, everybody.
Right, everybody had muskets, you know what I'm saying?
You shot one and you had to load it.
Hey,
it was like 5 minutes.
And they almost didn't win, their history tell it, if France didn't come to their aid.
That's right.
But that's true. Forgot about that.
They,
you know what? You're
150% lost.
Correct. That's right.
Right. So
I forgot about that.
Right. So, you know, if you know your American history, right, France came to their aid, and if France didn't, and if you don't know your American history, if you've seen the movie The Patriot.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, because that's where they show it at, because they were getting their ass whooped.
They were getting their ass whooped. They was about to lose that whole thing, but Most High said, no, let me send more heathen in.
Yeah, more Edomites.
Let me say more Edomites in to make
this
thing
come war.
Yep, exactly. So we're on page 122, yes. Governor Blinken Winship moved quickly, prohibiting all public demonstrations throughout the island and ordering an investigation. That's always their thing. They'll try to stop assembly. They'll try to stop all those type of things. They do it with us in small ways when they try to make us move off a place or whatever. Like now, like in Vegas, they're prohibited from being on the strip. Yep. They were fighting against it on the free speech stuff, but then COVID came and said, so let's use that to our advantage. Yeah, you can't be here on the strip because of COVID.
Right.
But they got them stupid performers. You got dudes dressed like Captain America and Thor out there.
Right.
Freaking.
With a dirty-ass Captain America.
Dirty costume.
Right, it'd be dirty, man.
Don't fit right.
When we were in L.A., man, Chewbacca looked nasty, right? It had the and the stormtrooper that rubbed with the Freezy Freaky.
With the Freezy Freakies that rubbed Zeph with dirty Freezy Freakies. Shout out to Captain Zeph. He led. It was Boba Fett.
That glove was dirty, bro.
It was a dude just like Boba Fett.
And with a dirty-ass glove.
Dirty, freezy, freaky glove.
Dirty,
if you're not a millennial, you know what freezy freakies are. Them gloves that used to go outside and like an image would come on.
Yeah, when it got cold, they made an image show up.
Yep. Man, I never had those. I wanted those. They were expensive. Yep. Yeah. You're like in between. That's why you don't know.
Well, plus I'm from Phoenix. Like we don't.
That's true.
Like, you don't get
that's
cold
true.
Here. Like that.
Oh, look, Ashaya's like, he did the crickets.
Freezy freaky gloves, huh?
Just look up freezy freakies, man. Them things would have moved back in the day, just like triple fat gooses. Ooh, them triple fat.
Yeah, but you didn't wear them both together.
No. So, the insular police raided several dozen offices and homes, seized documents and recording of Albizu's speeches, and 11 days later arrested Albizu and 8 other nationalists. Lacking any evidence of murder or incitement to murder, the prosecution charged Albizu with conspiracy to overthrow the U.S. government. So they tried to pin it on him that it was that he ordered a hit. They couldn't find any evidence of that, so they wound up charging him with conspiracy to overthrow the U.S.
Why?
Government.
Why?
That's them.
So the first jury...
We're trying to keep...
Oh... Those are the Freezy Freakies.
I actually do know what those are.
Let's see, warm, cold, right? You got like a whole image when you went out into the cold.
That's funny.
Bro, Freezy.
Yo, that's crazy. So it had nothing. And when it got cold, a skier came on the thing.
What a gimmick, huh? The people who made that must have, look, and they're still selling them for $29. They were $29 back then.
It seemed that way.
And that was a lot of money back then. Freezy Freakies. Yeah.
I love snow.
Just out of stock.
That's a good one, producer. That's a good one.
So it says the first jury of 7 Puerto Ricans and 5 Americans failed to reach a verdict. Just before the retrial at a cocktail party in the governor's mansion, U.S. Attorney Cecil Snyder showed a list of handpicked jurors to a well-named artist named Rockwell Kent. According to Kent, the people on Snyder's list were precisely the ones later impaneled during voir dire, who then sat in judgment on Albizu. So basically, they realized they couldn't persuade a jury the way they want to, so they manipulated juries. And that's the American penal system. Like, people say, oh, they put things in place to try to avoid that stuff, but...
Yeah, you, so-called African-American, right, and you got 10 Edomites and two African-Americans.
Yeah. And that's a jury.
I ain't going to go your way.
Right.
I see that, man. I'm giving up the ghost.
And that's a jury of your peers, apparently.
Right.
So it says Kent went public with this information, but it had no effect on the case. So even when that stuff comes out, they just, okay, whatever. Like, you know, sometimes you'll have these politicians and a scandal comes out and they won't step down, right? Like, what did they do to the one that's up there recently, Marjorie Taylor Greene? They're talking about her in the media. She has all these inflammatory things that she said, like real, like crazy stuff. And like, all the Republicans had her back. Yeah, nah, she don't got to step down. You know, they did some stuff that they do in there. They took off committees and things like that. But she's in office and she's rocking. Right now they on Cuomo for this thing.
Dang,
right?
Nowhere.
So, you know.
I'll be surprised.
He's saying he's not stepping down. So. So he spoke directly to the press, stating Albizu Campos was denied the right to a fair and impartial trial by jury. He even submitted a letter to Senator Henry F. Ashurst, chairman of the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee, but no inquiry was ever made. So everybody just basically, it was kind of one of those things where, look, you don't got to rule against it. Just ignore it.
Yeah, right.
Just ignore it. At the retrial, the clerk of the court declared 14 potential jurors unavailable or excused for cause, removed 5 others, and controlled the entire voir dire selection process. When the smoke cleared, the new jury consisted of 10 Americans and 2 Puerto Ricans.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the exact thing you said, 10 and 2?
Yeah, that was the exact number. Yeah, that was the exact number.
10 Americans. That must be the number that they like, I guess. Well, 10 and 2.
And the jury of your peers. And those two are sellouts, so they ain't going to.
Right.
They already took care. They greased the palm already.
So 12.
So it says, because the first one was 7 Puerto Ricans and 5 Americans, and they couldn't reach. So it was a hung jury.
Yep.
So on the first day of trial, July 27, 1936, every room, hallway, elevator, and staircase in the Jose Toledo Federal Building was jammed with U.S. soldiers. The surrounding streets were all blockaded. FBI agents mingled with the crowd. See, somebody will read that and they'll gloss over that. We've been talking about that. Bishop been bringing that out, and we've been talking about it for years, that they put agents in the crowd undercover.
Hey, right. Judas the Black Messiah, the Edomite FBI agent.
Yeah,
there,
you saw him there eyeing his infiltrator, right? You saw him there. Mm-hmm. So it says FBI agents mingled with the crowd. National Guardsmen roamed the halls. In the courtroom itself, over half the spectators were police and plainclothes detectives. They even put them in the courtroom like that. On July 31st, 1936, the incident police arrived with Thompson machine guns. Those are Tommy guns. Those are the ones with the round thing.
Those things hold, they hold, I think, like 100 rounds.
Yeah, it's like 100 rounds.
Crazy,
it's like 100 rounds in each canister.
Tommy gun.
That's American gangster.
That's the one from, what was that name?
Dick Tracy?
With Tom Hanks.
I was way off. I was going
to
say.
Something Perdition. Road to Perdition.
Road to Perdition.
The Mask with Jim Carrey.
Yeah, he had one there too.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, you're from Phoenix.
It's true.
No mean city.
And tear gas and cleared out the entire building. U.S. military commanders from Camp Santiago and the new chief of police, Colonel Enrique de Orbeta. So that's probably another sellout in there, right? Sat in the courtroom as the jury delivered its verdict. 10 years imprisonment for Albizu, 6 years for the other nationalists.
Jeez.
Elmer M. Ellsworth, a special assistant to Governor Winship, was a member of this handpicked jury. In a fit of remorse, he sent a letter to President Roosevelt stating the jury was motivated by strong, if not violent, prejudice against the Nationalists and was prepared to convict regardless of the evidence. So he's letting you know that they were persuaded to convict them. 10 of the jurors were American residents in Puerto Rico. Now you have to think about this, especially if you saw Judas and the Black Messiah. J. Edgar Hoover was the one that was behind all this during these times. Mm-hmm. J. Edgar Hoover was trying to get Fred Hampton on anything. Right. And what did they say they got him on? I forgot what it was. Groceries? They say he stole some groceries. Ice cream. That's what it was. Yep. And he said, good, we get him off the street for a while. But then when he saw how people and the movement went down after that for a little while, you're going to see the same thing. They know that that's a successful tactic. As we read on, you're going to see that by the time Albizu got out of prison, remember how I said he had 10,000 cadets in 21 towns? Right. They were down to like 1,000 at that point. Wow. Right? So people lost the faith, right? They lost the motivation. Only a handful of those committed butts, right, that stay there and rally for the cause. But this is why Hoover said, though, because when he came back out, what? They started rallying again. Remember, the agent was in the crowd. They saw his speech when he got out of prison. Right. He said, this guy's a problem. And he basically told them, he was like, yeah, prison's not good. You know, like, we got to do something more, basically.
It built it knowing that that was the publicity he was getting.
Yep.
He was fighting for the cause and suffering for it.
Yep, exactly. So he says, 10 of the jurors were American residents in Puerto Rico. And even the two Puerto Ricans were closely associated with American business interests. So like you said, Cap, they saw they were sellouts, the two Puerto Ricans that were on in there. It was evident from the composition of the jury that the Nationalists did not and could not get a fair trial. The letter was ineffectual, right? So this was actually one of the jurors, a special assistant, who had handpicked the jury. And he was one of the ones that did. And he said, listen, we forced these guys to convict them. And it still didn't do nothing. The letter was ineffectual. Albizu was jailed in La Princesa prison in San Juan. A Palm Sunday march in support of Albizu resulted in the Ponce massacre. I think you touched on that briefly on the Saturday show, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually, we'll circle back to that from this book's perspective on it. Finally, after an unsuccessful appeal, Albizu was flown to the U.S. Penitentiary in Atlanta, June 7th, 1937. I'm going to go a little quicker through these because I only need certain parts of it. Let me see here. So it says he was put in this Atlanta facility, and it says what they did to him there was, because he had special and constant attention, right, even though there was 25 out of 100 inmates, all his mail was open. He could only correspond with an approved list of people, mostly a few family members, and could not send or receive any packages. They didn't want him making moves from inside, right? They figured cut off that. See, that's another thing that's different with this movement in the Bible. And this is why the scripture tells you, right, don't make flesh your arm, trust not in a guide. That doesn't mean you don't respect and honor the leadership, right, that has understanding and knowledge. But what it's letting you know is that you should also know this and have the convictions to fight for it for the mission itself, right? When it says honor the king, right, so you have some knuckleheads out there trying to say we're talking about Bishop Nathaniel, honor the king. No, that means Christ.
Right. Jeez.
And that's why this movement can never fail, because it's not about one man. Right. It's about a people. They can try to destroy us. They can try to take down leadership. Brothers got to be ready to pick it up. Right. The whole if that whole senior leadership goes, the captain's got to pick it up. If the captains go, then the senior officers got to pick it up. And guess what? If it goes all the way down to all the rank is gone, then you members need to pick it up and continue carrying forward.
Right.
Right. And that still don't mean that Christ ain't going to return.
Right. Nothing's going to stop.
Oh, you really doing it. Is expediting that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly.
Once we're gone,
yep.
Right? Exactly.
Then in Christ shall rise first, right?
Yep.
That's right.
So he says he couldn't receive any packages and he couldn't receive any magazines or newspapers, right? He was allowed one visit per month, and he had people, like they said, like this Nobel Prize winning poet, right, Gabriela Mistral, people wanted to come and make his story known, and they wouldn't let those people visit him. People that would probably have some influence or platform, and they wouldn't let him visit him. Right. So his health deteriorated. Now, it got worse when they put him back in La Princesa. That's later. I think earlier in an earlier episode, we had read how I think in like a span of 24 years, he was in prison for like 20 of them. Right. So like they kept locking him up. So his health deteriorated. Reports of anemia and extremely low hemoglobin received no attention until Congressman Vito Marco Antonio threatened the warden. Marco Antonio represented East Harlem, which at the time contained the largest Puerto Rican population on the U.S. mainland. That's what's known today as Spanish Harlem, right? Mm-hmm. That's the camp that Captain Aparim and I were at prior to coming here, right? The Harlem camp. That's the East Harlem camp, or El Barrio, right? They call it Spanish Harlem. So despite all this, Albizu managed to write magazine articles. So he wrote articles for different things. He picked a pseudonym called Pedro Gringore. Pedro, I'll go Gringo. So that he could get that stuff out. It says he was working in the library, and one day he came upon this book called War is a Racket. So check this out. So it was by General Smedley Butler. Butler had been a Marine for 33 years and was the most decorated Marine in U.S. history. He had received 16 medals, 5 for heroism, and was one of only 19 men to receive the Congressional Medal of Honor twice. He retired as a Major General and for a brief period was the highest ranking commander in the U.S. Marine Corps.
I didn't realize it was that low.
One section of the book reads, "War is just a racket." And this is from the guy that we just read all those credentials. He said, war is just a racket. Only a small inside group knows what it is about. Remember how the scripture talks about their tongues will fall upon themselves? Every now and then, right, one of them will speak up their
Wait,
true
who
thing.
Wrote this? Smedley Butler wrote
Smedley this? Butler wrote this. This is from his book. Yep. War is just a racket. Only a small inside group knows what it is about. It is conducted for the benefit of the very few at the expense of the masses. Mm. I wouldn't go to war again, as I have done, to protect some lousy investment of the bankers. So he's letting you know what it's all about. He says, there isn't a trick in the racketeering bag the military gang is blind to. I think you had mentioned it's basically like the mafia, except it's legal what they do. So he says, it's a trick in the racketeering bag that the military gang is blind to. It has its finger men to point out enemies, its muscle men to destroy enemies, its brain men to plan war preparations, and a big boss, supernationalistic capitalism.
Yeah, that's exactly. He couldn't have said it any better, bro.
Let's get Ezekiel 28:3.
He couldn't have said it any better.
He articulated part of what this scripture, we bring this out a lot, but he's telling you what the inner mechanisms of how they have that dominance.
The book of Ezekiel, chapter 28 and verse 3.
Bring it out!
Behold, thou art wiser than Daniel.
Right. He said, listen, he says, there isn't a trick in the racketeering bag that the military gang is blind to. They know it all. They got this whole thing packed out. Right. Remember, their blessing in Genesis was that they would live by the sword. We're going to get that after this so that you can emphasize. You know how that scene in Spartans, how they says, what is your profession? And he sees the Athenians and like, I'm a potter, I'm a poet, I'm this. He goes, what is your profession? And they're like, war, right? That is the gift that was given to him. Remember, Esau is the spirit of Cain today. Cain had a gift of agriculture, right? But that was taken from him for his hatred. The gift that was given back to him, and you get a foreshadowing of it in his seed with Tubal Cain being an artificer of weapons, and then it expounds upon it in Genesis that a blessing given to Esau that it was war. War was given to him. They said, oh, you like blood? Yep. This is what you're going to live by. Yep. Let's finish this verse before we go to Genesis. Go ahead.
The book of Ezekiel, chapter 28, verse 3. Behold, thou art wiser than Daniel.
Come on.
There is no secret that they can hide from
this. This is what he said here. He said, there is no trick in the racketeering bag that the military gang is blind to. There's no secret that can be hid from him. Come on.
Verse 4, with thy wisdom and with thine understanding, thou hast gotten the riches.
He says that's with wisdom. What did he just say above? He said the war was to protect lousy investment bankers. We're going to read a graphic later that shows you how these major players and companies profit during these war times. I know this stuff is known, but when it's brought out to this level and this extent, it should kind of heighten your senses, right, to what's going on here. Is that it on that verse?
And has gotten gold and silver into thy treasures.
Right, and he has gotten gold and silver into his treasures, mainly because of his warfare. That's how he's able to do that. That's it on that verse?
Yes, sir.
Go to now in Genesis with the prophecy.
It should let you know and confirm that this Bible is a true book.
Yep.
It's not a book of fairy tales or mysteries.
It is a book of mystery, but not of like, you know, garbage.
In boot camp, we had to learn about Smelly Butler pretty thoroughly, and they left that part out.
Big time.
Right?
Oh,
that
yeah.
That is crazy.
Yeah. Yep, they won't tell you that.
I'm surprised that they even talk about him based on, because he was basically like a traitor.
Yeah, pretty much.
Based on him bringing this stuff out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, well, you know, that's the Marine bravado, so they're not going to let a guy with that much
pomp
and medals and their reputation kind of go to waste,
right.
You know? And then if anybody actually does some more research, you'll say, damn, he's revealing all the secrets, right? Read this, the blessing for Esau.
The book of Genesis, chapter 27 and verse 38. And Esau said unto his father, hast thou but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And Isaac his father answered and said unto him, behold, thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth and of the dew of heaven from above. And by thy sword.
So stop. Up until this point, it's like, damn, that sounds like that. If you read that, you're like, that sounds like a blessing you give to the first.
Yeah, right. Right.
But then he tells you how he's going to get it in the next lines that you started. How he's going to get the fatness of the earth. That goes with Habakkuk 2 and 5. Go ahead, read.
And by thy sword shalt thou live.
War, by thy sword shalt thou live. Come on.
And shalt serve thy brother. And it shall come to pass when thou shalt have the dominion that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck.
So that's after we lost the rulership in the little piece of land we had there in what was known as Israel then. All right? He came into prominence after that.
You know what people forget? That Genesis means the beginning.
Yeah.
The beginning of everything that is walking the earth today. So every characteristic of the 18 nations and 18 nations only that are walking the earth today is described in the book of Genesis. With Esau, it describes them in Genesis 25. It describes them actually as, again, from the lineage of, when you put the pieces together, that's a deeper breakdown. That Tubal-Cain, that Tubal-Cain, who came from Cain, is the artificer of weapons, is what it says, okay? But it keeps describing the character. Case in point, when it comes to Israel, you know that's us.
Right.
Because only blacks, yeah. Hispanics, Native Americans act that way.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
No other nation acts that way.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. Mm-hmm. That's proof right there. These two right here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and what basically Cap's really saying, I'm gonna sum it up for you, right? Because you could do a whole class on that and the characteristics of him, right?
Alone.
I'm thinking of the one in Genesis where he wanted to murder Jacob, all that stuff, letting you know where all that stuff comes from, right? The blessing here given by Isaac. That's the Spirit of the Most High speaking through him. He didn't give him that blessing because he wanted him to overrule his son.
Right.
You wouldn't want to put your children against each other.
Right.
Going back to the same spirit that's Cain, the Tubal-Cain spirit, right? All the way up to here, the most basically meaning he was this before that.
Mm-hmm.
Before the blessing was spoken unto him.
Right.
That was what was in his spirit.
Yep.
What his father told him was basically what the Most High knew would be magnified in these last days, right? Starting with the Greek Empire, right? It says evils were multiplied, and that's he never gave it back after that.
Right.
In some way, shape, or form, whether he was called Greek, Roman, Spanish, Portuguese, British, Russian, whatever it is, he would have power due to his war. Due to his warlike spirit, due to being an artificer of weapons. Look at it today. America is the most powerful nation in the earth. Who's behind? Who's also pretty strong, right? Weapon-wise? Russia.
Russia. Mm-hmm.
Right? Who else? Right? So you look at all these countries, and those are the major players in that.
Yeah, you look at NATO.
Right. All of that. And why? Because of the threat of their missiles, right? That's the sword now, flying swords.
Mm.
That's what it's going into, right? So go ahead, read that. Read from the part from by the sword. Go ahead.
Verse 40. And by thy sword shalt thou live, and shalt serve thy brother. And it shall come to pass, when thou shalt have the dominion, that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck.
Right? And that's what happened now. That fast forward to today, and that's where we're at, right? Because at one time we had the kingdom under the kings of Israel, right? And then that was done away with, right? So he took over, starting with the Greek Empire, and moved on from there. So this is what we just read when he gave this breakdown, right? When we read this here, I'm going to read this in the book again. There isn't a trick in the racketeering bag that the military gang is blind to, right? He's wiser than Daniel. You can't hide anything from him. It has its fingermen to point out enemies, meaning there's people that are look at targets. You know what? This will be a good place to us to go because this will be the benefit financially. This will be the benefit in keeping the Israelites down. It's muscle men, which is the actual army, right? Smedley was one of the muscle men, right? Mm-hmm. And it's brain men. And these are the guys in like the Pentagon that sit there and they have all these strategies. They go into the war room with the president. They say, these are our options, Mr. President, mm-hmm. right? That's the intel that they have to push these things out. Yeah, we got this guy here. The brain men are the ones that let the muscle men know where Bin Laden was hiding or where this guy was hiding, so on and so forth. It's a machine. It's a machine that just moves. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing that they can fit. If they really want to go to that whole thing where Congress approves war, that's all BS. That's to make you feel like you are in control by putting your elected, so-called elected officials in office. They know how to operate this thing. It's a well-oiled machine.
That's right.
To the point where you actually think you have some say in what's going on.
That's crazy, bro.
It's wild. It's wild. This man is no joke. This is why it has to be a spiritual warfare.
Right.
You ain't coming up against them with your little guns, with your stash that you got in your bunker for the end of the world. It ain't gonna happen. It ain't gonna happen, man. He says, I spent 33 years in active military service as a member of the Marine Corps. This is Smedley. I served in all commissioned ranks from second lieutenant to major general. And during that period, I spent most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, and for the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. Cold-blooded to the face, just let you know what the deal is. Check it out. He says more in this book of his. I'm curious. Look, the name of the book, the producer, look it up. It's called War is a Racket by General Smedley Butler.
Right.
And see if the book, if it's even available, I'm curious to see what the price would be. So he says, I helped make Mexico, especially Tampico, safe for American oil interest in 1914. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys to collect revenues. And what you're going to see here, with the exception of him throwing China in there, right? Oh, wow, you could get it on paperback for $8.
Yeah,
because
they know nobody will read it.
They know nobody's going to read it. Nobody's going to care about that thing.
People will read it, but not the...
Who knows? Whenever anybody in IUIC mentions a book, that thing disappears. Yeah,
it'll be $895.
Right, it'll be $895 by tomorrow,
Put it in your cart.
Put it in your cart.
Oh, free shipping.
Free shipping, quick.
It's prime.
Just for that alone, it's worth it, all right? So... One thing you're going to notice about all the places that we ring off, because, right, we always say, listen, you got to understand their motivations are always about going to be so bold that they mention it here. Mm-hmm. Even he doesn't know that, right? That's for like, I always think of the documentary where KRS-One was talking about the way the hierarchy of things are. He says, and the government, like when you see the president and stuff like that, he goes, that's like if you go into a Burger King and you ask for the manager. And, you know, so they bring you the president of the United States, right? And you say, no, not that guy. I want the real manager. Mm-hmm. And those are the guys in the back. Like if you were to depict it, those are the men in suits that all you see is the shadow silhouette in the background calling the shots. Right?
And
nobody really knows who those people are.
Right. So in other words, it ain't the manager from McDonald's. You want the board of directors.
Right. Yeah, right. 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 Right.
Right.
I want to see the manager.
Yeah. Right. So it's what you'll see here is that how they did it. These are all Israelite countries. This is where Israelites reside, is how they did it. This is what he's telling you, right? So even though up above he said it was for bankers, what the bankers didn't tell you is, again, yeah, we're going to use them to make money. We're going to get rich off of them, right? And within the midst of that, that was putting us in a place where we would not return to our true identity. So he says he helped make Mexico, especially Tampico, safe for American oil interests in 1914, right? Meaning there was oil there that would have made Mexicans a world power, mm-hmm. and America took it. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys to collect revenues, right? So they were able to come in there and deal with the economy. Remember, Cuba at one time was booming, right? You see historically, you see in movies, right? Havana Nights and all this stuff. People would go there. The celebrities were there and everything.
The mob
right?
went over there.
The mob was there heavy. Right.
Maya Lansky.
Yep. That, right. Maya Lansky. Right. You see that in Scarface.
Yep.
Right. He says, I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys to collect revenues. I helped in the raping of half a dozen Central American republics for the benefit of Wall Street. I helped purify Nicaragua for the international banking house of the Brown Brothers in 1909 to 1912. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for American sugar interest in 1916. All places where Israelites reside. In China, I helped to see to it. This is the one odd one, right? And this was more their war move, right? To see to it that Standard Oil went its way unmolested.
Rockefellers.
Yep, Standard Oil. Looking back on it, I feel that I could have given Al Capone a few hints. The best thing he could do was to operate his racket in three districts. I operated on three continents.
Hey, and again, more hypocrisy because didn't they go after the mafia?
Yep.
They do the same thing.
Yeah. No, yeah, you can't do that here, yep. Right? But we're going to do that on a global level.
And that's how the mafia felt. Right. They were like, really?
Yep.
Come on, man.
Yep.
That's why, if you remember the one scene in The Godfather when Al Pacino told Kate, she says, well, congressmen don't have people killed. You know, he was like, who's naive, Kate?
Yeah.
He said, who's naive, Kate?
Yep. Yep. Right. That's a good point. Now, reading all this, you see that scene and you're like, damn. That's what he's really talking about.
And he says they're all part of the same hypocrisy. That's his lines.
Damn, they're all part of the same hypocrisy. Hey, and it's more or less set kind of not too far after this time period that we're dealing with here.
Yeah, that was the 1930s. Yeah, around the same time.
Absolutely. Let's get Habakkuk 2 and 5. We go here a lot, but he just broke down where they at. So we're giving you a modern take on this, not just when he took over Greece, Rome, what's known as Europe today. He's telling you how he took this side of the world and made it his. And guess what? Till this day, you have these leaders, presidents of Venezuela, Colombia, Brazil, governors in Puerto Rico, presidents of Dominican Republic, that actually think it's their country and their agenda that they're pushing.
They try to stick this young dude. Yo, Trump is gay. They're not even Trump.
The dude in Venezuela?
Yeah. They try to stick this dude in there, and he's clapping like he's part of Congress and stuff like that. And Their whole coup got messed up. And you know what's funny? You never heard anything about it again.
Wow.
Yep. Right.
If they were successful, they would have been bragging about it.
They were trying to support him to help overthrow
Maduro.
Maduro. Yeah. And when they saw, I guess Trump bungled that too. It didn't go too good. They just stopped talking about it. They're like, all right, we'll find another guy.
No, they said it had nothing to do with us.
Yep.
They did that on their own. Yo, nobody does an operation like that on their own, bro.
Nope.
You don't make no moves without the government.
You know somebody got in touch with that dude and told him, hey, this is going to be successful because we got your back.
Yo.
And he was like, word? Okay. Bro, that dude's probably on the run right now. My dude's probably trying to put a hit on him. And guess what my dude learned during that? School of the Americas.
That's right.
We got to circle back to that now that we're in a primetime slot. Because we went over that years ago on the Saturday slot. We got to spend some time on that thing with Harvest of Empire, School of the Americas, all that stuff. Let's hit Habakkuk 2 and 5 real quick. All right.
Habakkuk chapter 2 and verse 5. Yea, also because he transgresseth by wine. He is a proud man, neither keepeth at home.
Right. So he don't keep at home. Right. It's he is a proud man. Come on, read.
Who enlargeth his desire as hell.
Right. His desire is the interests of the investment bankers and to keep the Israelites hidden. Come on.
And is as death,
right? Because he brings his war with him to accomplish this. And even it's to the point now where just the threat of it makes nations bow down to them.
That's right.
Come on.
And cannot be satisfied.
And he's not satisfied. He's not satisfied. He continues on. That's it on that verse?
But gathereth unto him all nations. And heapeth unto him all people.
Right. This is what he does, meaning he tries to take all these people and put his interests there so that his influence is there. That because that doesn't necessarily mean literally that everybody needs to live here, but what? He has embassies everywhere. In every country, he has an influence.
Right. And everywhere he goes, the people there, they follow the policy. Yes.
They follow that agenda, even if it's unwittingly.
Hey, that's why the Muslims, they fight. They're like, dude, we don't even want your stuff here, man.
Right.
We don't want this here, man. So everybody, they make them out to be like the bad guys. Dude, they're doing it then what they
done to us.
Right.
That's it.
Bro, I saw it, I witnessed it, bro. Like, from one minute to another, like, it's night and day. Like, it's one way one second. Next time I go over there, there's KFCs. Mm. There's, like, porn shops. I'm like, what the hell is this? Christmas trees?
And that's why a lot of these places that are resistant to America's friendship is because they know it's conditional upon allowing this doctrine that comes with it. Mm. That's why the Bible calls her the harlot, the mother of harlots, because what comes with her is all that debauchery, all that sin, all that lewdness.
Right, because of the whore that sits on many waters.
Right, whoredom comes with her.
I was very grateful for the KFC, though, you know, to be able to slide in from a patrol and get a two-piece with coleslaw.
It don't taste the same, though.
Judah.
It doesn't, bro. It's just like
goat. When you never had
it. Everything tastes like goat.
It's like goat.
It's goat. They made it look like chicken.
It's a goat's wing.
Goat wing. that's it on that verse, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's go back to the book. So Ben Butler provides 11 pages of facts and figures showing the profit margins of hundreds of U.S. corporations during World War One.
Bro, I got to get that book.
The table on page 125 shows six of the most egregious. Let's look at the table real quick, right? So that's on the next page. We'll come back and finish this.
Yeah, that is some good research, bro.
Bro, that's why I couldn't understand for in the beginning, I couldn't understand why a lot of these historians were against this book. Well, he has citations for everything. He did his damn research.
He's a smart guy, too. I seen that interview with him, man.
And
that's a really good interview.
Yeah. You know why? Because it's that whole Willie Lynch effect, because those other historians, it's like, oh, don't talk too bad about Master. Mm-hmm. You can't bring it up. They try to tell you, no, it's not exactly like that or whatever and blah, blah, blah. Come on, get out of here. It's exactly like that, right? So look at this. So DuPont Chemical, right? DuPont, right? That's your
that crazy ass family.
No. Now it's become like Teflon and stuff like that. They're the ones that do the coatings, but they're primarily known for that, right? The coatings on pots and pans. Now they sell sprays that you put on stuff, right?
There's a DuPont Circle in Washington D.C.
Might probably be the same. The DuPont.
They donated.
That's their family name. Yeah. The DuPonts.
They're part of the elites.
Pre-war annual profits $6 million. Wartime annual profits, $58 million. Percentage profit increase, 966. Bethlehem Steel, $6 million profits. Wartime profits, $49 million, 816% increase. Anaconda Copper, $10 million per year profit pre-war, $34 million during wartime, 340%. These are some of the highest ones. Check this out. Central Leather, annual profits pre-war, I guess that amounts to, $1 million. Their thing went up to $15 million. That's a 1,320% increase. General Chemical, weren't even making a million. $800,000 a year was their profit. $12 million during wartime, a 1,400% increase. And an International Nickel, not the nickel, meaning the metal nickel, $4 million profits per year. Wartime, $73 million. They must have needed a lot of nickel for missiles and bombs, I guess, maybe.
Hey.
Almost 2,000% increase.
Obviously, the Most High knows who he created. He knows their spirit, right? So he's the puppet master. Historically, after every depression or economic downturn, we always go to war.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
They mess the system up. They spend like just like when the Spaniards came to the islands, Puerto Rico, that they ate for what did you say? How much did they eat?
It was like enough for like eight families or something like
Eight families. Yeah. It's the same thing. This is why us here living in America, we're all in debt. They promote that. Mm-hmm. And then that's their way. See, but the difference is that they got themselves out of it.
Yep.
How do we get out of it? Bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And then we're screwed for 10 years.
Buy your own bootstraps.
Right.
Buy your own bootstraps.
Like, bro, you stole my bootstraps. What the hell are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. So let's go back to the other page. Let's finish up what we had highlighted there.
Bro, 1,800% increase.
That's unheard of, bro.
So it says, Butler's father had been a U.S. congressman for 31 years and had chaired the House Naval Affairs Committee. By studying U.S. Senate appropriation documents, Butler found that 49 steel plants, 340 coal producers, 122 meat packers, 153 cotton suppliers, and 299 garment makers had profited enormously from World War I. The war had cost $52 billion, and $16 billion of it, 30%, had been pure profit for the war suppliers.
That's a lot of profit.
War is a racket confirmed everything Albizu had seen in Puerto Rico. When he tried to do something about it by leading labor strikes and advocating for independence, the United States had rigged the jury and thrown him in jail. Around this time, on June 3, 1943, Albizu was released on probation in New York City. He had been in prison for over 7 years. 7 years on basically no charges on a rigged jury, and then they let him out in New York. So within 3 days, on June 6, 1943, Albizu was admitted into Columbus Hospital with a diagnosis of arteriosclerosis, coronary sclerosis, brachial neuritis, and anemia. They were messing with this dude, right? And when you read, if Lord's will, we get to it in another show or down the line, we touched on it briefly. When he was locked up again in Puerto Rico, they were irradiating him. They were doing all types of stuff. So, you know, they were probably putting stuff in his food that messed him up, different things like that, keeping him malnourished. So it says FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover didn't believe the diagnosis and sent a memo to the U.S. State Department. Albizu Campos is reported to be using his private room in the Columbus Hospital as the headquarters of the Nationalist Party of Puerto Rico in New York City.
Jeez,
he receives many notable visitors and holds meetings in this room. Campos continues to be hospitalized on his own volition in order to elicit sympathy and appear as a martyr.
Wow.
Bro, that dude was a demon, bro. Jacob Hoover was the demon of demons, bro.
Bro, he got a special place.
Yeah, he does.
Oh, my goodness. You want to talk about double?
Yep.
My goodness. Hoover bugged the hospital room and listened in until a nun discovered a microphone in a wall lamp. That same day, Congressman Vito Marco Antonio rushed down from East Harlem. He yanked the wiring out of the walls, cursed Hoover through the microphone, and threatened to produce the wire on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives. Albizu stayed in Columbus Hospital until November 9, 1945. So he was hospitalized for over 2 years, trying to get well from what he was jacked up with. So, meaning there had to be some more details in there, right? I mean, it wasn't just the arteriosclerosis and coronary sclerosis that had him in there. They jacked him up pretty bad. And he lived in the Bronx. Represent until December 11, 1947.
No mean city.
On that day, he went on to the Brooklyn Navy Yard, boarded the SSS Catherine, and returned to Puerto Rico.
2 years in the hospital, bro. That's insane.
Yep. From the moment Albizu set foot in San Juan, we're on page 126. There we go. From the moment Albizu set foot in San Juan, Hoover became obsessed with following and recording his every movement, essentially becoming his Boswell. So it's no different. The same way, right, you see him, how he went after, Fred Hampton and the Panthers,
Malcolm
how he
X,
was dealing, Malcolm X,
Martin Luther King,
all right? He was on it even for Northern Kingdom, all right? In a memo to U.S. Secretary of the Interior, Julius Krug, he wrote, Pedro Albizu Campos, the president of the Nationalist Party, arrived in San Juan, Puerto Rico, December 15th, 1947, from New York. All that's missing is the time and by what method he got there, which he knew. He just didn't put it in the report, right? This is how detailed they were casing
him. Yeah, this proves, too, that when Hoover said that the biggest threat to America is black unity, he's talking about Hispanics as well,
he's
too.
He's talking about Hispanics
as well.
He sees
us all as the same exact thing.
So when you hear that black unity, right, people who don't understand that so-called Hispanics are part of that as well,
right, exactly.
They're going to think, Hoover wasn't trying to get y'all jacked up. He absolutely was.
Oh, contrary monster.
He understood Ciroc 25 and 1.
That's right.
Yep.
Unity of brother.
So it says he was greeted upon arrival by the leaders of the Nationalists, Communists, and Independence Parties of Puerto Rico. But watch this. Watch the craftiness. A crowd of several thousand met him at the dock. The crowd, including an honor guard of 40 black-shirted cadets of the Liberation Army under the command of Colonel Ramundo Diaz Pacheco. Later, at a mass rally of the Nationalists, Communists, and Independistas, Albizu condemned the United States Navy expropriation of Vieques, Puerto Rico, and warned of further expropriation by the United States. Teaching of English in Puerto Rican public schools, application of the Selective Service Act to Puerto Rico, meaning being drafted, all right? So you can't have all these other rights, but you're going to go fight in wars for us. And claim that now is the hour of decision and action, not words. The anti-communist hysteria aside, he knew what he was saying, right? The same way they try to call us black identity extremists and say that we're a hate group, at that time, communist was the trigger word. So he had to throw him in the mix with the communists to try to defame his reputation so that he could lose credibility in galvanizing people. Hoover's description is accurate. Thousands of Puerto Ricans and dozens of FBI agents met Albizu at the dock. right, and dozens of FBI agents. They packed into San Juan Cathedral and followed him in a heaving mass to Sixto Escobar Stadium, where he would address a standing-room-only crowd of 14,000. The Puerto Rican flags flew everywhere, from cars, storefronts, houses, trees, and even the stadium rafters, and WPR broadcast Albizu's speech island-wide. I had done an old camp video a long time ago. We'll probably maybe feature it on the show, of what the Puerto Rican flag really represented, right? And I highlighted this piece because you'll see that today on the Puerto Rican Pride Parade and in New York and all that stuff, and they don't even know why they're doing it. They don't know this history. And they're waving. That flag meant that you were for independence from your oppressors. And now they don't wave it that way. They wave it in revelings. They wave it in whoredom.
Hey, and even that flag was designed by America. Mm-hmm. They didn't want the original.
It's a play on it, right? They didn't want the original.
So they decided that same flag that they're waving in honor.
Yeah.
Just the same what the oppressors decided.
And you know what they did? How they were able to go ahead and, much like they took the rainbow and made it a sign for the gay pride movement, right, which we really know was a covenant between the Most High and us that he wouldn't flood the earth again, they took this flag and made it their national flag, so now it didn't stand for rebellion anymore. Now it became the official flag of the island. So now it's not even a symbol
crafty,
for anything.
Crafty.
Mm-hmm. So the FBI agents added a curious glamour as they openly filmed and taped the event and noted the identity and license plate of every nationalist leader in attendance. A youth choir sang La Borinqueña, and then Albizu began his speech. My name is Pedro Albizu Campos. You are my people, and this is our island.
That's right.
A roar filled the stadium for over an hour. He thundered about independence. The stadium shook as the crowd members stomped and chanted and cheered and pumped their fists in the air. El maestro was back. Let me jump down a little bit. So for the first few weeks, Albizu felt the joy of family he hadn't seen in 10 years and the warmth of many holidays. So, you know, they talks about obviously the world of Three Kings Day, gosh, the 8 days of Octavitas. But soon he noticed some changes across the island. The newspapers weren't clamoring for independence anymore. Remember, he was gone for around 10, 11 years at this point.
That's crazy.
But soon he noticed some changes across the island. The newspapers weren't clamoring for independence anymore. No labor movement had developed. Nationalist party funds were scarce. Enrollment in the cadets of the Republic had dropped by 80% to less than 1,000. And the U.S. military was everywhere. The Navy had occupied Vieques and was using it for artillery practice, exploding 5 million pounds of ordnance per year. We're going to talk about Vieques in a little bit. Camp Santiago occupied 12,789 acres in the town of Salinas. Ramey Air Force Base covered 3,796 acres in Aguadilla. So notice all these military installations on this tiny island, right, that they put in there, okay? Fort Buchanan had 4,500 acres in metropolitan San Juan with its own pier facilities, ammunition storage areas, and massive railroad network into San Juan Bay. Every July 4th, the U.S. flexed its muscles. This is why they put all that in there. They said, oh, yeah, we're going to show them, right? They want to try to rise up. We're going to show them. Every July 4th, the U.S. flexed its muscles with a military brass band, 3 infantry battalions, a tank company, a bombardment squadron, 3 aerial fighter squadrons, the 504th Field Artillery Battalion, the 18th Mechanized Cavalry Squadron, and 4,000 soldiers, the entire 65th Infantry Regiment, marching down Calle Fortaleza, just 3 blocks from Albizu's house, to remind everyone who was paused. Bro, that's OD talking about, yo, look who you're trying to fight against. Look who you're trying to fight against.
Gangster.
It says, and then there was Roosevelt Roads, the largest naval station in the world.
That's the video right there of you teaching in camp.
Damn, you have to bring up that old video.
There it is.
Gosh. I don't even look like myself now. It says, the largest naval station in the world, spread out Vieques Island and the Puerto Rican mainland. It encompassed 32,000 acres, 3 harbors,
I was just trying to look that up.
9 piers, 1,340 buildings, 110 miles of road, 42 miles of oceanfront, and an 11,000-foot runway. It housed 17,000 people and serviced up to 1,000 ships annually.
32,000 acres and when you read further up, how many acres of that was military bases?
Yep.
Almost the whole thing.
Almost the whole thing. They were everywhere. The island's politics were also beginning to change. Luis Munoz Marin, We're going to spend some time on him eventually, right? We're featuring the revolutionary.
That's right.
We're going to jump on the sellout in a little bit. Luis Muñoz Marin controlled the Puerto Rican Senate and had shifted the dialogue from independence to economic development.
Oh, they told him to
do Remember Trick Baby, right? They said they tried to take him, mm-hmm. right? The ones that are smart for their people and then raise them up to be like them, put them in the seat. Remember, he offered Albizu the position that Muñoz Marin eventually had. And Albizu turned it down. He said, no, we're going to go for independence. Muñoz Marin went for it. And when we read his story, just to give a little backstory, they had him by the balls, basically, because he was kind of on board with independence, but then he had some vices with drugs and alcohol and women.
How they do it.
And they used it against him.
Hey, going back to the Godfather with the yep. senator. Remember, they set him up. They killed the prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said the lawyer came in. He said, hey, it looks pretty bad. Yeah, I don't know what happened. It's the senator. He goes, mm-hmm. sorry, we'll make all this go away. You know what that meant.
Yep. Mm-hmm. They had him in his pocket now.
Yep.
That's what they did with Marin. And what was most important about it is that it was a Puerto Rican face.
Mm-hmm. And guess what? That also happened with O'Neill.
Yes. Right. Yes, same thing. They used it against them and said, hey, you know what? You got this. You can do this time or we're going to do this.
And this is why we got to be mindful of that at night, UIC.
This yep. is it.
He said, or you can just go home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or you could just go home. Or you could just go home.
They let him go home. They didn't mess with him. He lived his life for months, mm-hmm. like 3 months. Then they gave him a call, he said.
But we knocked. You better answer that door.
Yeah, and that's how it happens. That's how it happens. Mm-hmm. Yep. So he shifted the dialogue from independence to economic development. And you know what's funny about that, too? That's all you hear people that are people that preach certain things. To them, that's the answer. That's the solution, economic development.
Yeah, that's vote or die.
Economic development is a part of a larger revolution, not the basis for it.
Right.
We just read the racket, the military gang racket that they have for economic development. And you think economic development is your answer? Mm-hmm. That's peanuts. They'll let you have your millions. They might even let you have some billions. These dudes deal with trillions and more.
Yeah, their money's infinite.
It's mm-hmm. infinite. They're the creators of the money.
That's right. Hey, they manipulate the stock market, the Forex market, the crypto market. And all markets.
Yep. Hey, I think I had that. It wasn't about that, but I spoke about it in one of my classes about the whole thing with Robin Hood and how they were able to, the hedge funds were losing and they figured out a way. Mm-hmm. And what they did, they froze the regular individual. They call them retail investors,
yep.
which means the common guy. They froze the common guy out. And now you couldn't sell your stock that increased, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 800%.
Hey, those of you that know how to stock about the stock market. They see the thing is dipping too quick, they freeze trading.
Mm-mm.
Who has the power to do that? They freeze trading. All trading stops until things stabilize.
Yep.
You tell me that's not a racket.
Yep.
You tell me they don't have power.
Right. Your stocks increased in value, but you could only sell 100 shares a day.
That's crazy.
Or 10 shares a day, depending on
what your money.
Of your money. And you think you have power? You think economic development is going to help you? Get out of here with that nonsense.
Hey, Smedley, Butler said, one of the things he said about was Wall Street.
Yep.
Good night, Chesty yep. Puller, wherever you are.
So he shifted the dialogue from independence to economic development with a program known as Operation Bootstrap, right?
There it is.
So let's talk about Operation Bootstrap. Well, no, let's talk about, I don't know. Vieques Bootstrap.
At least you're not that great. You're not leaving him there.
Right.
But we know Vieques is
Vieques, and if anything, we can always open up with Vieques.
Vieques is a show in and of itself.
Yeah, because then that opens up other things too, right, with more of the experimentation and stuff they did. All right, so let's pull up.
Plus the title says economic slavery, so.
Yeah, so let me go into Power Hour. Hold on. Here we go. Damn, that's a pick of the video. Goodness gracious. All right, let me go to Operation Bootstrap. Let me click on that. Operation Bootstrap. And then what else did I have? Knowledge Economy. We're going to talk about that in a second. Operation Bootstrap, Knowledge Economy.
And then I had Vieques. All right, so we'll leave that. We'll leave. If we can get to it, we can. I don't think we will. Not today. All right, Operation Bootstrap. So this is the Operation Bootstrap that we just read about in the book, all right? Operation Bootstrap is the name given to a series of projects which transformed the economy of Puerto Rico into an industrial and developed one. So remember, if you followed the show, if not, you can go back to earlier episodes. I think I did one called The Economic Rape of Puerto Rico, where we spoke about how they came in and they dominated the agricultural business, yep. Right? They took the natural resources when they came in, supposedly giving us independence from Spain, even though we were just granted independence. We were about to install a government and rule the island. And they took over. They built a sugar empire. They built a tobacco empire, so on and so forth. So the federal government of the United States, together with what is known today as the Puerto Rico Industrial Development Company, set forth a series of ambitious economical projects that evolved Puerto Rico into an industrial high-income territory. Now, remember, Muñoz Marín was preaching this as a way for prosperity for Puerto Ricans. As we continue to read about Operation Bootstrap, you're going to see that it was very much just another method, because basically the United States, Esau saw that agriculture was waning. And they said, we still need to juice Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico has never been a rich port for Puerto Ricans, but it sure has been for Esau. For the United States, all right? And they figured out another way to milk it. And so he says that evolved Puerto Rico into industrial high-income territory. But what they don't tell you is high-income for who? High-income territory for who? Bootstrap is still considered the economic model of Puerto Rico as the island has still not been able to evolve into a knowledge economy.
Can I say real quick? Mm-hmm. When Christopher Columbus came, he saw Puerto Rico. He named it Puerto Rico. It was named Puerto Rico because the first thing he saw, all the riches and everything, he said, ay, que Puerto Rico. Oh, what a rich port. What did they do? The same exact thing. Esau knows Esau. Spaniards are Edomites.
Yep.
Christopher Columbus and the conquistadors, they were Edomites. They came here with a strategy that Esau, their descendants, continued to perpetrate. It's yep. the same thing.
Yep.
It's just used with modern technology and modern terms.
They won't let us go because they can continue
to
make money
off of
us.
Go.
They refuse to let us go. So let's read what he's saying here, right? We're going to jump to knowledge economy. But first he said that it's still considered the economic model of Puerto Rico. By this stage in the game, Puerto Rico should have evolved to what's known as a knowledge economy. Well, what is a knowledge economy versus them being stuck in an industrial one? All right. Because the day of industrial, that's over with. Mm-hmm. Like, we should be moving on to different things if you're an advanced economy. So it says knowledge economy. The knowledge economy, or the knowledge-based economy, is an economic system in which the production of goods and services is based principally on knowledge-intensive activities. So basically, all the inventions that made industry easier, that made agriculture easier and things like that, you're past that stage, and now what you're looking for is efficiencies to keep up with this stuff. So meaning the skills and the knowledge of a person are more valuable than the manual labor, right? Even though you still need manual labor for certain processes, a society that's still stuck in a manual labor mode cannot prosper in today's world economy.
Hence the gin.
Yes. Yes.
Which was what started the industry.
Yes.
Cotton gin, which was started
yep.
the industry.
That's what started it.
It was people that they were doing that manually, and Esau said, no, we got to think based on a knowledge economy system
mm-hmm.
and create something that can duplicate right. thousands of them.
And the gin then bred, okay, we don't need to send these guys into handpick. Now we're creating machines that just puts it all into play. Because as the gins got better, they said, listen, we could just send a machine through there and scoop all this cotton up. And we don't have to have all these slaves and food and all this other stuff, right?
That's a knowledge economy.
Right, right. And this is why when the Black Codes, right, before Jim Crow were in place, it was never going to work for us because they moved on. In them giving freedom, they moved on to industry. So while, you know, you might have been a freed slave that can now farm, you still had to manually collect it
And then you had to pay the white man to gin it because you didn't have the gin machine.
That's a knowledge economy for the Caucasian
man. For the Caucasian man. That's a perfect micro way to show you what's going on in Puerto Rico by them being stuck in this industrial thing.
Esau don't do anything unless they're going to benefit on the other end.
Yes. Right?
They did not free us from slavery.
The house always wins.
Right. The house always wins. They didn't free us from slavery if they didn't know that we would still be slaves to them.
Yep.
In a different form.
Yeah, they were not going to let us go.
Because again, the golden rule, right? He who owns the gold makes the rules. They understand that.
Right. So knowledge-intensive activities that contribute to a rapid pace of advancement in technical and scientific innovation, as well as accelerated obsolescence, meaning stuff becomes obsolete. So while we had freed slaves that were able to pick cotton, they became obsolete because they were not able to basically make wealth off of that because they didn't have the advancements that Esau had, and they still had to go to them for stuff. A perfect example of what we're reading, and at some point we'll feature it on a show, I believe, is the documentary The End of Poverty.
Boom.
All right. And this is why much of Latin, Central America, and the Caribbean is, it's not just Puerto Rico, it's stuck in this bootstrap economy that is the model today. And the premise of The End of Poverty is that the United States and other interests come into these countries, these Israelite countries, all right, and they use the labor force in industry to mine the resources, pick the resources, but they don't give them the tools and equip them with the advancements to refine the resources. And refining means they'll let them chop down trees, but they don't give them the means to make furniture out of the wood or to make paper out of it, right? Or they'll let them mine iron, but they won't let them make goes out of it or different things like that, right? Auto industry is like a big deal with that because the auto industry is dominated by Asian and American interests. That's it.
Right. You could chop all the trees you want, but we got no way to get it out of the forest.
Right.
That's where Esau comes in.
And the way the global economy is the finished product is worth much more than the raw product. So what winds up happening, right, and this is oversimplifying it, you really should watch the documentary. What winds up happening in this environment is that they export this stuff out to make their money raw, and then they have to buy the stuff back to them from these other countries at a markup because now it's refined.
Right.
So the refined thing has more value than the raw thing. Hence, crude oil, right, is not as good as gasoline itself, right?
Right.
That's why gasoline is so much more, right? Because a barrel of crude oil, even when it's at its height, 80, 90, 100 bucks or whatever it is in recent times, all right, that's a whole barrel. A barrel will fill your car if it was gasoline, right, 3, 4, 5 times over, maybe more than that, right?
Right.
But gasoline, they charge you per gallon $3, right?
Again, if you know the stock market, you have the price of crude oil.
Right.
And you have the price of gasoline.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's exactly how it is.
Yeah.
Just one other thing real quick. The Edomites that are contrary to Esau's system, not because they like us.
Yeah, right.
It's because they ain't down with this.
Yep.
That's what that's about. Okay?
Yeah.
It ain't because that, oh, they feel sorry for us. No. It's because they're not part of it. Because it was the battle against the bourgeoisies and the peasants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's exactly what
that's
went
exactly,
down in France.
Right. Yes.
It was the same exact thing that we're seeing today. It wasn't that they care about us. They're just not part of the crowd.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're the
casualties of wars.
That's casualties of war. They got caught up.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yep.
It says the key element of value in a knowledge economy is the greater dependence on human capital and intellectual property. So intellectual property is like Apple files a patent for the way their screen is more touch sensitive than any other screen on the market, right? That creates value and allows them to charge more for their products, right? Or whatever it is, right? Tesla for a while was dominating the scene, right? And so now all these other guys are trying to catch up to make their electric vehicles as good and as efficient and as powerful with them, right? That becomes your intellectual property. You don't even need to produce it. Just the fact that you own the patents to it make it so
what's valued.
And human capital, meaning this is why they pay CEOs so much money versus a percentage of total salary versus everything else. You would hope that they're good CEOs and that they're going to steer your ship well, right, if you're the board of directors and the shares. And intellectual property for the source of innovative ideas information and practices. Organizations are required to capitalize this knowledge into their production to stimulate and deepen the business development process. There is less reliance on physical input and natural resources, right? This is what we've been explaining. A knowledge-based economy relies on the crucial role of intangible assets within the organization's settings in facilitating modern economic growth. A knowledge economy features a highly skilled workforce within the microeconomic and macroeconomic environment, meaning at all levels, institutions and industries create jobs that demand specialized skills in order to meet the global market needs. Knowledge is viewed as an additional input to labor and capital. In principle, one's primary individual capital is knowledge together with the ability to perform so as to create the economic value. So it's not just knowing it, but you got to be able to execute on it. Right. And that's what creates it. Hold on. There was something else in here that I wanted to bring up. Okay. In a knowledge economy, highly skilled jobs require excellent technical skills and relational skills, such as problem solving, the flexibility to interface with multiple discipline areas, as well as the ability to adapt to changes, as opposed to moving or crafting physical objects in conventional manufacturing-based economies. Manufacturing-based economies is basically similar to what when we go back to bootstrap, right? You'll see. A knowledge economy stands in contrast to an agrarian economy in which the primary economic activity is subsistence farming. So that's where Puerto Rico was. So really, Puerto Rico is stuck between manufacturing and agrarian at this point, as is many of the countries in the Caribbean and Central and South America. Their primary thing is still agrarian stuff. You get your bananas and it'll say product of Argentina, right? Or product of Brazil, right? You'll get your fruits and vegetables and it'll say product of Mexico. Hell, even your flowers come from like Central and South America and they ship them here. So they're still very much agrarian and based on manual labor, in which the primary economic activity is subsistence farming, for which the main requirement is manual labor, or an industrialized economy that features mass production in which most of the works are relatively unskilled. A knowledge economy emphasizes the importance of skills in a service economy, the third phase of economic development. Hold on, I don't think I need anything more on this. Okay, I don't need anything more on that. Let's go back to bootstraps. You can understand the difference. All right.
Just reading this pisses me off.
Right.
So bootstrap, right, is it put Puerto Rico into an industrial high economy territory. And like I said, it's really more of a hybrid of agrarian and industrial. Bootstrap is still considered the economic model of Puerto Rico and many other nations in Central South America and the Caribbean, as the island has still not been able to evolve into a knowledge economy. The island's traditional economy was based around sugarcane plantations. This was in Puerto Rico, right? We read about this. By the middle of the 20th century, it remained one of the poorest in the Caribbean. So even though 33% of the world's sugar came out of Puerto Rico at one time, the country was the poorest, meaning the people that those national interests, those bankers, those people who owned those companies, they became wealthy and the country was not. In May 1947, the Puerto Rican legislature passed the Industrial Incentives Act, eliminating all corporate taxes. Check this out. Remember, this was supposed to be a good thing for the citizens of Puerto Rico. You tell me how this actually influences it. You can see the writing on the wall already. So they passed legislature, the Incentives Act, and eliminated all corporate taxes to encourage U.S. investment in industry. Not in people, not in skills like we just read that would take them to the next step. It encouraged U.S. investment in industry, meaning they said more of you guys could come in. Basically, they ran a train on Puerto Rico.
That's what Texas did.
Yep.
Right.
Businesses don't have to pay very low taxes, if I'm not mistaken, in Texas.
And you know, they talk about trickle-down economics. That stuff doesn't work.
Right.
It only benefits those at the top. So to encourage U.S. investment in industry, this was proposed by Senator and future Governor Luis Munoz Marin of the Popular Democratic Party.
He proposed it.
And became known as Operation Bootstrap. Based on 1930s New Deal economic relief reforms and infrastructure provided by the programs such as the Puerto Rico Reconstruction Administration, Operation Bootstrap intended to move Puerto Rico away from its agrarian system and into an industrial economy. Basically, they had made all the money they needed to make off of sugar and farming, and they said, all right, now, guys, come on. Now is your turn. Come on in here and invest in corporate things here, right? so that now industry can take place and now your families can make money.
That's an economic gangbang.
That's exactly what it is. That's a good way to put it. It's an economic gangbang. It says the government's administration of economic development, today known as the Puerto Rico Industrial Development Company. See, this is stuff, this might not sound as interesting to some people as, oh, they came and raped and cut our heads off and stuff like that. But this is the type of stuff that allows them to keep us in captivity and have us think we're free.
Hey, right. They did that already in 1492. They learned, like through the Willie Lynch concept, mm-hmm. that killing us is not going to be productive, so you get them with this.
The curses say that we'll be crushed and spoiled always.
Right.
This is a part of how that oppression evolved.
Yeah.
It was the physical one, and then it became an economic one, and yep. we're still oppressed to this day.
As yep. economics evolved, right, the slavery had to evolve as well.
Absolutely.
We have never been freed. Never. Never. I don't care what proclamations are signed. I don't care what liberties you think you have. We have never been fully free.
And again, the Edomites that fall under that, because right, that's the argument. They are the collateral damage.
That's it. That's to sell the illusion of inclusion.
There it is.
The Edomites that fall. That's what he means by collateral damage. A few got to fall by the wayside for this whole thing to work.
Mm-hmm. Didn't they say something like that in Trick Baby? Or was it just Trick?
You might be right.
I've heard that. Right. It was somewhere about that.
Right. So it says, basically what happened is it encouraged the establishment of factories now. So first it was land, now it encouraged the establishment of factories. And yes, we have all these Puerto Ricans who work for low wages in the factories.
And New York, right. It was like that.
Yep.
In the 70s and 80s, it was like that.
So the U.S. government in Puerto Rico enticed U.S. companies by providing exploited labor at costs below those on the mainland. So basically, kind of like how they say everybody outsources everything to China now, right? You don't do manufacturing here in the United States. They'll try to tell you that that's a bad thing. The reason they don't really give a crap about that, right, is because they've moved on to a knowledge economy.
Yep.
So the people that need to make the money here. So when they say that they're going to bring – when somebody campaigns on bringing jobs back, what he's telling you is you're going to be like these guys, low paid. You're not – but those guys who worked in the auto thing, they don't make a lot of money. Those guys who work in the meatpacking factories here, they don't make a lot of money. That's not where the money's to be made, right? This is why you need people that maintain the state of the world, their world, right? Like the Bible tells you, you'll have those that will maintain the state of the world. Mm-hmm. You need people like that. So it says basically they enticed them and they told them, listen, labor costs here are below those on the mainland. Slaves, in short, access to U.S. markets without import duties. And profits that could transfer to the mainland free from federal taxation.
The hell is this?
So this was supposed to be for the people, and they put, just like Trick Baby, they put a guy with our face up there,
yep.
but for all intents and purposes, he was them.
That was the overseer from Egypt.
Yes, that's exactly what it is, the taskmasters of their own people. The Administration of Economic Development invited investment of external capital, porting the raw materials and exporting the finished products to the mainland. To entice participation, tax exemptions and differential rental rates were offered for industrial facilities. As a result, Puerto Rico's economy shifted labor from agriculture to manufacturing and tourism. The manufacturing sector has shifted from the original labor-intensive industries, such as the manufacturing of food, tobacco, leather, and apparel products, to more capital-intensive industries, such as pharmaceuticals. I read something else about that, that's the new big thing that they got going on there, pharmaceuticals, chemicals, machinery, and electronics. Through this project, a rural agricultural society was transformed into an industrial working class. But we're going to look at the charts, and you're going to see that the effect of this was mass migration starting in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, that created the influx of Puerto Ricans moving to the United States because the opportunities were leaving there as these guys continued to basically rape the island, right? So it says, although initially touted as an economic miracle, by the 1960s, Operation Bootstrap was increasingly hampered by a growing unemployment problem. At meaning, the economic miracle was for them. They said, right. Snap, this thing is working great. It was cheap labor, just like with slavery. They said, why would they change the model? They just changed the way and it was executed. Mm-hmm. They got rich off of free labor from slaves. So now they said, we need to get rich off of almost free labor from slaves, just without all the other caveats that you have to
right,
do for them.
Because once you pay somebody, right,
yep.
the mentality is I'm not a slave anymore.
Yes, that's exactly right. it. That's exactly it. So he says,
As living standards and wages in Puerto Rico rose, manpower-intensive industries faced competition from outside the United States. It also faced criticism from civil rights groups and the Catholic Church, who perceived the government promoting birth control and engaging in non-consensual surgical sterilization. So all of this had all this major impact. American industrialists, influenced by eugenicist policies, concerned with overpopulation and a perceived lack of self-control on the part of the working class Puerto Ricans. They said we have sex like rabbits, right? And that all we do is reproduce. As of 2005, the continental United States remained Puerto Rico's major trading partner. That's not so long ago that the little island was the major trading partner. Basically, that's like when you set up different entities to like do business with each other, mm-hmm. right? But it's all owned by the same people. And what that does is that minimizes different tax liabilities and things like that. So he says they received 86% of Puerto Rico's exports and provided 69% of its imports. Look at the effects. 1940s, jobs in fishing and agriculture were 230,000, right? Jobs in manufacturing, only 56. 10 years later, the jobs went down, right? 6%, 55,000 jobs in manufacturing, right? By the 1960s, no more fishing and agriculture, right? It was down to 125, right? 81,000 in manufacturing. But look at the employment net loss, right? And the employment net loss ratio. By the time you got to through the 70s, okay, there was only 68,000 farming jobs left. They basically, everything became, so they retrained the slaves on the island mm-hmm. and kept them relatively with the same type of living standards, right? And then employment continued to drop. Look at some of those numbers, 15,000, 65,000, 6,000. So they couldn't make money there. So they came to the mainland. That's why you had this. They didn't. It's not that America was the place of dreams. Right. They created an environment where the economy was unstable. So they said, we got to get out of here. I can't feed my family here.
You know, that just happened recently in Puerto Rico again.
Yeah, there was a mass exodus again.
Exodus of Puerto Ricans. Okay, mm-hmm. Would you bring out one more thing?
Go ahead. I finished with this article.
Yeah, because you said that they said that we breed like rabbits.
Yep.
Give me Genesis 49 and 22. They know these scriptures. I'll read it. Joseph, you got it?
I got it.
Yeah. Okay.
The book of Genesis chapter 49 and verse 22. Right. Joseph
is the tribe of Ephraim. Okay, when it mentions Joseph, it's talking about the tribe of Ephraim and Manasseh, primarily Ephraim. Go ahead.
Joseph is a fruitful bow.
A bow is a tree. B-O-U-G-H is a tree. We're a fruitful bow. Just like the Most High God told us to be fruitful and multiply, we are known. They're right. We are like rabbits. We are known to have many, many children. Israel as a whole, but especially Ephraim. Okay, go ahead.
Even a fruitful bow by a whale. All
right, meaning Puerto Rico. It's surrounded by ocean, okay?
Whose branches run over the wall.
And that's a class for another time, man, but that's talking about our daughters. They went over the wall, meaning they went ahead and mixed with the Spaniards.
Yep.
But the point was about the fruitful bow.
Yep. Hey, and so basically what wound up happening is you saw what the genesis of – see, because everybody talks about the Jones Act, but that happened later. The foundation for all these things was set by all these corporate breaks and all this other stuff. And now it's to a point where there's really not that much left to be done and made in Puerto Rico. So they're like, whatever. What we saw when we were there on that first trip that we went was a lot of developments, bougie developments going up. And I think I remember one of the brothers telling us, like, you're not really going to see our people living there. That's for these big wigs, these people come in. Basically, they're Esau's coming in to live in these places and build these luxury places, and then our people aren't set up correctly in there.
Right, because you look at San Juan when we went over there, man. That thing looked like we were down like in South Beach.
Yep.
Yeah, right.
You see the and you had another exodus, like you said, recently coming over here because
same reasons.
Yeah, for very similar reasons. I think did we stop there on the quest? I think we did. I don't know. I had stopped there on a cruise, I think, after we had visited. Anyway, the sales tax rate is like almost 14%.
It's ridiculous, bro. The gas was like crazy. Remember when we went? I mean, it's in like, not in dollars.
Oh, it's per liter. So it's not per gallon. So it's per liter.
But it was still ridiculous.
But a liter is a fourth of a gallon. Mm-hmm.
and it's almost the same as the price of a gallon of gas here for a liter.
Yep. Yeah, bro. It was.
So for same price for a fourth of the same gas that you would get here. So they created and destabilized this whole thing with Operation Bootstrap, and it put it in a place where you see a result of a lot of those things today, all right? You know, we digressed a little bit. We're going to talk about Vieques. We'll start next week's show talking about Vieques. I'll probably touch on it just briefly, give you some history on it, and then we'll talk about it because we still have a few minutes left for airing. And then we'll lead the show with that. But we're going to jump back into the book because it mentions those things in the book. But in the section that we're in, it doesn't dive deep into it yet. So let's look up Vieques. All right. Let me get the links that I have for that.
Sales tax was like so ridiculous there when we were there. That
I remember when we went to eat, like the sales tax was
that
crazy.
I was reduced to Johnny Walker Red. As my
damn, man. That's a bum's drink, man.
That's right.
That's
the
well, bro.
I can't afford anything else. That's good. My goodness. Bro, everything was expensive.
That's the
bro.
Lowest of lows,
the water,
man.
On the rocks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Yeah.
So let's give a little background about Vieques, right? So Vieques, right, in full, Isla de Vieques, is an island municipality of Puerto Rico in the northeastern Caribbean, part of an island grouping sometimes known as the Spanish Virgin Islands. Vieques is part of the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico and retains strong influences from 400 years of Spanish presence in the island. So Vieques is about 8 miles east of the Puerto Rican mainland, right? And it's a 20-mile long island by 4.5 miles wide. So it's not that small, you know, so obviously smaller than the main island. Its most populated barrio is Isabel Segunda, sometimes written Isabel II, the administration center of the northern side. The island's name is a Spanish spelling of a Native American, likely Taino word, said to mean small island. It also has the nickname Isla Nena, usually translated as Little Girl Island, alluding to its perception as Puerto Rico's little sister. The island was given this name by the Puerto Rican poet Luis Lorenz Torres. During the colonial period, the British name was Crab Island. Vieques is best known internationally as the site of a series of protests against the United States Navy's use of the island as a bombing range and testing ground. So we'll go into detail next week. Cancer rates there are ridiculous. There's some long-term impacts for what they were doing over there, which led to the Navy's departure in 2003. Today, the former Navy land is a national wildlife refuge. Some of it is open to the public, but much remains closed off due to contamination and or unexploded ordnance that the military is slowly cleaning up, meaning not at all.
Yep.
Some of the most beautiful beaches on the island are on the eastern end. Okay, so it talks about the beaches and all that stuff. Hold on, let's scroll down. All right, let's go to where it says United States control, right? We'll give a little background on that before we move to wrap up. Puerto Rico was ceded by Spain in the aftermath of the Spanish-American War under the terms of the Treaty of Paris of 1898. We read about that also on the show, and became a territory of the United States. That's what Commonwealth means. It's a territory. They own it and all the people in it. In 1899, the United States conducted its first census of Puerto Rico, finding that the population of Vieques was 6,642, but this included 704 residents from nearby island Culebra. In the 1920s and 1930s, the sugar industry on which Vieques was totally dependent went into decline due to the falling prices and industrial unrest. That was a real motivation for Operation Bootstrap. Like I said, is the agriculture was in decline. Many locals were forced to move to mainland Puerto Rico or St. Croix to look for work. So St. Croix, some of the people from St. Croix are not Benjamin. They're Ephraim. Don't misunderstand. All right. In 1941, while Europe was in the midst of World War II, the United States Navy purchased or seized, and they always try to say purchased, they threw some money or whatever, it never the full value at it, purchased or seized about two-thirds of Vieques as an extension to the Roosevelt Roads Naval Station. So that's the naval station that we read that was the biggest in the world, all right? Nearby on the Puerto Rican mainland, the original purpose of the base, never implemented, was to provide a safe haven for the British fleet should Britain fall to Nazi Germany. Much of the land was bought from the owners of large farms and sugarcane plantations, and the purchase triggered the final demise of the sugar industry. This is why they had to shift. Many agricultural workers who had no formal title to the land they occupied were evicted. Right, because, see, that's another reason the Bible's on point when it says all things got to be done in writing,
yep.
Right? I mean, they'll still might find a way to get you out of there, but it was probably land passed from their father and their father verbally, mm-hmm. Right?
all through history, and since they had no paperwork to it, they knew it. They knew it was theirs. They said, nah, it's ours now. They seized it. That's that eminent domain stuff that they could do. After the war, the U.S. Navy to continue to use the island for military exercises and as a firing range and testing ground for munitions. All right. We'll read this part, and then next week we'll jump into the cancer and the radiation stuff. So this is protest and departure of the United States Navy. The continuing post-war presence in Vieques of the United States Navy drew protests from the local community, angry at the expropriation of their land and the environmental impact of weapons testing. The locals' discontent was exasperated by the island's perilous economic condition. Protests came to a head in 1999 when Vieques native David Sanez, a civilian employee of the United States Navy, was killed by a jet bomb that the Navy said misfired. Sanez had been working as a security guard. A popular campaign of civil disobedience resurged. Not since the mid-1970s had Viequeneses come together en masse to protest the target practices. The locals took to the ocean in their small fishing boats and successfully stopped the U.S. Navy's military exercises for a short period until the U.S. Navy and two U.S. Coast Guard cutters began controlling access to the island and escorting boaters away from Vieques. On April 27, 2001, the Navy resumed operations and protesting resumed. Hold on. Let me see what else is here. So it got some notoriety. There's some names here that they mentioned, political leaders or whatever. That's what I said. Some people remember it. I remember it in the early 2000s. It was like a big deal. It had made some national news, or at least news here. Right. And they were all like advocating for the Navy to stop being there. They made songs about it. It says Immortal Technique, Tego Calderon, Uya. They talk about the show The West Wing.
I'm sure that was pretty clean.
Right.
Dance with the
Devil. Spoke about it a little bit. As a result of this pressure, in May 2003, the Navy withdrew from Vieques, and much of the island was designated a national wildlife refuge under the control of the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. The island was also placed on the National Priorities List, the list of hazardous waste sites in the United States eligible for long-term remedial action financed by the Federal Superfund Program. So it wasn't just bombs is the point. I want to leave you with that as we go into it, because we're going to talk about the cancer rates. We're going to talk about the impact even today, right? And I like this because this is real recent, right? And you'll continue to see, bro, Puerto Rico, they jacked Ephraim up. I often joke and I say, bro, people talk about Puerto Ricans and they say, bro, Puerto Ricans are crazy and bugged out. There's a reason behind it, all right? It's not just that we're crazy and bugged out for the sake of...
They really bugged out, man. If you think about it, sit back and, you know, get it from the spirit perspective.
Uh-huh. Right. Closure of Roosevelt Roads Naval Station followed in 2004, and prior to Hurricane Maria, the Roosevelt Roads Naval Station was reopened. So they closed it for a little while, that big naval station we read about, and they reopened it prior to Hurricane Maria. We'll talk more about the effects of cancer and how it affected... not just the people on Vieques, but there's some carryover from that because of the radiation experiments and things like that that they were performing there, you know. I know we had the calling number, but we didn't put it up. It's too late for a call now. But you got to producer, remind us if we don't mention it to bring the calling number out when we go over that stuff. So I pray you got some understanding. You're still seeing some of the modern plights of this stuff. Oh, you know what? 4 minutes. I forgot to go through that. Damn, it was when Operation Bootstrap. Lamentations 5. I want to give you a modern take with Operation Bootstrap on Lamentations 5. Damn.
Bring it out.
Yeah, we got a few minutes. We started a few minutes late.
Immortal Technique.
Immortal Technique. Lamentations 5 and 1. And we bring this out a lot. And we talk about conquistadors. But we don't talk about the aspects of what we just read with Operation Bootstrap. That was the connection I was trying to make. All right, so Lamentations 5, start at 1. All right, we'll just go through a few of these real quick.
The Book of Lamentations, chapter 5 and verse 1.
Remember,
O Lord, what has come upon us. Consider and behold our reproach.
This is part of the relevance of why we go through this stuff. Yes, we must remember biblically, above all, what came upon us and our reproach. But a lot of people, they don't believe in the Bible. You had somebody, I don't know why you would tune into a show that's Bible-based, talking about, I don't believe in the Bible. I practice my family. You keep doing that. Let's see how that works for you, right? Let's see how that continues to work for you and how that's going to help your people. Voodoo doesn't tell you why you went into captivity and what you need to do to get out of it,
right?
All right?
Give you any solution.
Idiot. Voodoo doesn't do nothing, talking about voodoo, right?
The Bible says, remember, O Lord, what has come upon us. Consider and behold our reproach. It says, consider and behold our reproach. Some of what we're just reading about is going to tell you that, right? Come on, read.
Our inheritance is turned to strangers, our houses to aliens.
They basically took Puerto Rico and everything in it for themselves. They took it and ran with it for themselves. They call us the illegal aliens and all that stuff, even though Puerto Ricans are citizens of the United States, and they still talk to – but when this whole thing – and it came on the scene because of the hurricane, they said Trump asked, Puerto Rico's part of the United States. He didn't even freaking know that, dummy. Right? Go ahead. Read on.
Verse 3. We are orphans and fatherless. Our mothers are as widows.
Listen, part of this was they were irradiating our men, giving them testicular cancer, the testing on it. I'm giving you a more modern take on these things, right? It says our mother as widows. They were killing the men. Remember, they had forced sterilizations. Come on.
We have drunken our water for money.
This is the Operation Bootstrap, all right? We have drunken our water for money. Come on.
Our wood is sold unto us.
The arrangement that the United States has with Puerto Rico where we export stuff and then they import the stuff right back into us, right? This is a modern telling of these curses to let you know, listen, when the Most High said these things will pursue you and overtake you and upon your seed forever, he meant that thing. Because, you know, you got to be able to bring out the modern iterations of how these curses are still here today because then people say, well, that was then.
Right. Yep.
That's not now. You're not in shackles now. You don't have this. And this is as a people, right? So they sold the wood unto us. That's Operation Bootstrap. Come on.
Our necks are under persecution. We labor and have no rest.
They have it stuck in an industrial era economy. People have to leave the island because they're working 2, 3, 4 jobs doing menial labor to try to get things. They're trying to see, hey, maybe I just come to America and things are better, right, to the mainland. And they're trying to move there. They labor and have no rest. Come on. Why?
We have given the hand to the Egyptians and to the Assyrians to be satisfied with bread.
To the Assyrians.
Yeah.
And to the Assyrians. To the
Assyrians.
Call me Ashallah. Speaking of Hebrew.
Read that verse again.
Now you know what a surety.
Come on.
It was the Assyrians.
We have given the hand to the Egyptians and to the Assyrians to be satisfied with bread.
You know, a lot of times we only talk about this from the perspective of the voluntary submission that we gave into them.
Mm-hmm.
But with the advent of things like Operation Bootstrap, we had no choice, right? So we gave our hand to them. In order to feed our families, we had to work for whatever wages they gave us and whatever conditions they put us in to continue to try to thrive and do what we needed to do, all right? That's all I wanted on that. That I want you to think of those verses in relation to the Operation Bootstrap stuff there were. Because I know sometimes, you know, things with economics, it can get a little dry, right? I mean, you know, some of our people don't look at those larger scale agendas that they have and see how it affects us. Like I said, we always get excited about, oh, they raped our women and they did this. Yeah, they did that too.
No, it's important to bring it out because the curses are more than just physical. All right, they're much more than just physical. They're the economic tolls they take on our people. It's the spiritual, mental, everything that the Northern Kingdom, which is the Hispanics and Native Indigenous,
mm-hmm.
everything fits it to the T.
Right, I know. So he had the guy come on the show talking about, I don't believe in the Bible. Listen, the Bible's our history, all these things. So you might like some of the historical facts that are coming out, but we're showing you how the Bible is relevant to it as well. All right?
That's right.
Hey, somebody commented, I always said Puerto crazy as you thought it was the MSG in the Sasson. Yeah, that thing has mad MSG
sure
in that
did.
Thing, man.
It sure
it does. It's good as hell, though, man. Back in the world, man, you used to put that on the chuletas before the chuletas.
Yeah. Hey, no, so sister said all the tribes are crazy and bugged out. The whole head is sick. Yeah, but Ephraim's like extra crazy.
Benjamin's crazy, too, man.
Yeah, but it's a different crazy.
Yeah, they're nuts.
No, they're just what is it? They don't have any inhibitions. That's what I say with Benjamin.
Well, they're the wolf.
Right. They don't have any inhibitions, right? So they don't restrain themselves. I'm just talking about, like, Ephraim's just real bugged out, like talking to himself bugged out.
The way they dress.
The way they dress, all that stuff like that. Hey, and I'm Ephraim, all right? So nobody get offended if you Ephraim and you're bugged out. That's the truth, okay? That's the damn truth. I lived in Little Puerto Rico, right? We grew up in the Bronx.
We snap on everybody.
Yeah, everybody. We're equal opportunity.
Everybody can get it.
All right? Everybody get it. All the tribes get it.
Everyone can get it. Everyone
all
can
the
get
tribes
it.
Get it.
Everyone can get it.
Well, that's the show for this week. Tune in Saturdays, all right? We have the show at 11 a.m. Arizona time. That's the Power Hour version of the show, 1 hour, okay? Those will be on next week. We have the time change now, so it's 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Arizona time. 10 p.m. Eastern, all right? Lord's will next Wednesday, all right? Pray you get some edification. And with that, we say shalom.
Shalom. Shalom.
Lego. Israel is back. We back. Israel is back. We got back. The nations running scared because Israel is back. All lies on us because we keeping them low. When the Lord returns, Babylon will fall. We got them on lock. God chosen people with Christ as our rock. You heathen, get ready for our whip to crack.
Like, but that's the trick, right?
Yeah.
Make it, put it in front of their face, because then I go read anything.
That's what he said. He said, once you start paying,